Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to today's update on Oyster European's equities. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star and one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today. Without any further delay, I would now like to turn the conference over to your presenter today, Nathalie Ducret. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am. Good afternoon and welcome to this European Equity Strategy call. Today with us is Michael Clement. Mike is the head of European Equities team at SIS Asset Management and the fund manager of the co-fund Oyster European Opportunities. And it's more concentrated higher alpha versions, Oyster European Selection and Oyster Continental European Selection. Since he joined us in 2014, the funds he is managing are all outperforming their respective markets while exhibiting a positive upside-downside capture. During this call, Mike will recap 2017 performance and then explain how the funds are reacting in a 2018 market marked by a significant pick up in volatility and a meaningful sell-off. So now I hand over to Mike.
Thank you, Nathalie, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for joining the call today. It's been a pretty exciting week so far. I'll keep my comments quite brief, to probably about 15 minutes so that we have time for questions at the end. I've got a number of things I want to just highlight today. For those of you who weren't able to dial into our call that we did just before Christmas, I'll spend a little bit of time just giving you some details about our 2017 performance, what worked, what didn't work, you know, what kind of market we're in. And then secondly, I'll talk a little bit about performance so far in 2018. I know it's very early days, but just especially in light of what's going on in the markets this week. And then lastly, and probably more importantly, I'll touch on where we're positioned and where we're currently hunting for new ideas. So hopefully you've all received the slides which we sent earlier today. I'll go through some of those slides more quickly, some I'll spend a bit more time on, but hopefully you can follow along the presentation as I go. So just starting on slide two, just to recap 2017, you know, this was quite a difficult year for us. As a long-term contrarian stock picker, what I really like is sort of market turmoil, where there's got various stocks from various sectors moving in and out of favour. And this allows me really to benefit in two ways. Firstly, it allows me to find new contrarian ideas, find them a bit easier, as we're able to look through that short-term nervousness surrounding certain parts of the market and put good long-term ideas into our funds. And the second reason I like sort of more violent markets is it allows us to make money from the stocks we bought in the past. You know, as you know, our style is to buy parts of the market and companies when they're out of favour. And then what happens over that five-year investment horizon that we have is that when sentiment swings back into favour, we can realise the value that we saw when we did the initial work as those stocks come back into favour. And this is actually, if you look at 2016, this is exactly the sort of market we had in 2016. And you remember 2016 well, I'm sure. You know, we had those various political events such as the UK Brexit vote back in June 2016. We had the US election. We had the Italian referendum. We had the distress in the energy market as the oil price hit $27 a barrel. That was earlier in 2016. And then, of course, we had various aggressive sector rotations that happened throughout 2016. And that's a good market for us, and you can see that in our, especially our higher alpha accounts, we made very good relative returns. 2017, on the other hand, was very different. You know, the market was mostly driven by momentum, especially in the second part of the year. And probably more importantly, volatility was incredibly low. And of course, volatility is now on everyone's mind. But you know, the VIX in the second half of 2017 hit multi-decade lows, fell below 10. But it wasn't just the equity markets that were very calm. You know, if you look at the bond market, option markets, commodity markets, all those asset classes saw extremely low volatility levels. And frankly, I just didn't understand it. I mean, I'm a simple long-only equity stock picker, but I couldn't find really any good reason why volatility was so low, why the markets were so calm. And that made it quite difficult for us, you know, both in terms of generating short-term performance, but also finding new ideas. Performance-wise, you know, our luxury goods names did very well in 2017. These were companies such as Swatch, LVMH, they became more popular Throughout the year, it is clear that the Chinese consumer was buying luxury goods again. You know, to remind you, we bought these companies two and a half years ago when they were highly out of favor and people were saying that the Chinese consumer is never coming back. And in 2017, that was clearly put to rest. You know, if you look at LVMH's results, for example, they're just incredibly strong. You know, 14% organic growth rate driven by Chinese and Russian consumers buying again. So that helped us. You know, we did a good job of stock picking within the financial sector, as you know, not in the banks, which we're typically underweight, but, you know, in the asset management companies, the real estate plays, and a number of financial stocks in the diversifying world. You know, our bet on the recovery in the Italian banking system worked well. Companies such as DuBank, which is Italy's leading third-party servicing company for NPLs, worked well. Anima, which is, of course, an asset manager which we used to play a recovery in Monte dei Paschi, you know, all contributed to 2017 returns across our various strategies. On the other side, though, we had two headwinds. The first was that the market was driven by sectors where we're typically structurally underweight. You know, sectors such as IT was up 24%. The material sector was very strong on the back of commodity prices. I think materials rallied about 18% during 2017. And, of course, the banks and the insurance world rallied as well. And if you look at it, in aggregate, this is about a third of the market, these sectors. And so there was a general headwind against us. And, you know, as you know, we have quite structural biases towards certain sectors because of what we look for in stocks. Certainly we had a headwind as we're not weren't in those sectors, which did pretty well last year. The second headwind, and probably the most important one, though, was our volatility play. For those of you who've seen me present or I've met over the last 12 to 18 months, you know that we have been generally doing two things in our portfolios, especially within the financial part of our holding. And what have we been doing is we've been reducing our exposure to market-level sensitive stocks, so essentially the asset managers. And we've been reducing, for example, our exposure to Schroders, to people like Ashmore and to Aberdeen, you know, as these stocks have worked very well, but are essentially linked into the overall level of equity markets and debt markets. And as those markets and asset classes performed very well, we became more nervous about the risks to those investment cases. So we've been reducing generally our exposure, but we switched our exposure from asset managers essentially into what I call financial infrastructure type stocks, so stock exchanges, and people who would benefit from volatility picking up. And this is really just because when we looked around the European equity markets in 2017, it was a pretty tricky year. As I said before, there was not a lot out of favor, either sectors or countries. Everything was just sort of going up. And there didn't seem to be very much distress everywhere, anywhere. And actually, the only thing we thought was actually highly out of favor was volatility. The world seems to be short volatility. So what we did in late 2016 and throughout 2017 is we increased our exposure to companies in Europe which would benefit from a normalization of volatility. So today we have about 10% of our portfolios in this kind of company. But in 2017 that was a drag. You know, in particular one company, Flow Traders, which is a Dutch-listed ETF market maker. I'm sure you've heard me talk about this before many times. You know, that was the biggest single drag to our performance as volatility went ever lower. So that's really what drove our sort of 2017 performance. On the terms of the volatility play, so we're very confident there was a rebound at some point. We just didn't know when. Clearly, that question's been answered. It was Monday night, as you know, with the moves in the S&P and the VIX. You know, volatility is, I think, coming back to talk about to stay, and we can talk about that a bit more in the Q&A. But, you know, as a result, you know, in 2017, we had the opposite impact where they just didn't really work. Overall, you know, I'm happy with the current shape of our funds. You know, in the messy market we've seen this week, the portfolios have performed exactly as I would have hoped and expected, i.e. we outperformed substantially the market this week, protected by, firstly, the kind of high-quality companies we typically buy with strong balance sheets, plus, though, that 10 to 12% of our portfolios in the volatility plays have worked very well, as you would expect, and in terms of our relative performance this week, it's protected the fund. To give you a sense, we've outperformed so far this week by about three 100 basis points over the market. So that's maybe just a sort of a comment on 2017 and where we are. In terms of, I'll come on to in a second talking about where we're positioned and where we're looking for ideas, but maybe a quick word about the year-to-date performance. As many of you will know, January was quite a difficult month for us as the market continued to move higher in a very momentum-driven way. For example, the market was up about 1.7% in January, and our funds, depending on the strategy, were flat to slightly down, which led to an underperformance of between 1.5% to 2.5% over the benchmark. As you can see on slide 3, this is the latest data as of a couple of days ago. We've substantially recovered all of that thanks to this week. In fact, as we sit here right now, we're probably marginally ahead of the benchmark year-to-date. But if you look at what drove January's performance, and this is what's on slide 4, 5, and 6, it's got all the details you could hope for, but essentially it came down to one position in our portfolios, which is Pandora. There wasn't a lot of news flow in most of our stock, but in Pandora we saw some news flow which caused the shares to have quite a lot of movement. Just to give you some background here, Pandora is obviously the jewellery company listed in Denmark, making the famous for their charms and bracelets. And we added to our position, bought this position in our strategy in August of last year, then increased it again in October, and then again in early January as the stock remained weak. And now it's actually one of the biggest holdings across our portfolio. The company actually is trading pretty well. If you look at the latest set of results, there's good organic growth rates coming through. Even in the US market, where a lot of investor attention has been focused, people are very nervous about the outlook for the US retail industry. And actually, the company held a capital markets day in Copenhagen in the middle of the month. And Basil, my consumer analyst, went to Copenhagen, and when he returned, he was pretty positive on the message. They gave a medium-term outlook, which looks pretty sensible to us, and their new strategy. Yeah, and they're talking about 7 to 10% organic growth, driven half of it by opening new stores, and half of it from improving the introducing new collections. And we thought that's a pretty sensible strategy. I think why the stock's been quite volatile is because shorter-term investors have been slightly concerned about the mid-term margin guidance in the gate, which is 35%. And to put that into context, today Pandora is an incredibly profitable company, earns about 37% EBITDA margins. Whilst I understand that investors are a little bit nervous about that medium-term guidance, when you look into the reasons behind it, they look pretty sensible to us. You know, when I look at it, and I look at Pandora's performance across compared to other consumer stocks, I think we can only really find one other company which is more profitable than Pandora, which is LVMH, which has about 45% EBITDA margin. You know, this is a very well-run company with incredibly strong market positions, with very good profitability, great cash flow, and yet the shares look very cheap. Today it's on a P/E of about 11 times. You get double-digit free cash flow yield, you get a 4.5% dividend yield, backed by an incredibly strong balance sheet. So in the short term, I can understand why people are nervous, but actually in the long term, I think this is an extremely interesting position to have in our portfolio, hence why it is one of our largest positions. But as you can see from slides 4, 5, and 6, depending on which fund you want to look at, Pandora's been a drag on performance in January, and that's really the majority of what drags our performance down. In terms of the other holdings, there's not really anything else to report. Ontex, which is a company listed in Belgium, which is the European leader in diapers, nappies, and incontinence products, an extremely glamorous company, reported slightly disappointing results, mainly due to some integration problems in Brazil. Swatch, on the other hand, continues to perform well for the same reason as LVMH. Chinese demand is coming back. That's pushing up watch sales. Yeah, we've been talking about this with clients and for the last 2 or 3 years. Bertha Capital, the litigation financing business, announced incredibly strong numbers and also said that they're going to deploy increasingly large amounts of capital into this very fast-growing industry, $1.3 billion. That was better than we and the market expected. So there's some positives and some negatives, but nothing so far in 2017 has really happened news flow-wise to really change any of our investment cases. It's simply probably the most interesting thing is Pandora, where we had some new, as I said, more medium-term guidance. So overall, at the moment, we're flat against the market performance-wise, but encouragingly, from my point of view at least, is that hopefully this momentum-driven market we've seen for the last 12 months or so is coming to an end, and with a return to volatility, this is, should be an environment which is more positive for our style of investing. So where are we positioned? And this is on slide 8, and this is where I'll stop and then open up for questions. As you know, and you would expect with our low turnover strategies, not a lot has changed over the last 6 months or so. On the left-hand side, you can see broadly how the European equity portfolios are responsible for our positions. We still have about 7% exposure to recovering Italian financial crisis. This is in European selection, for example. We have DuBank, Eurocastle. We have in some of our other portfolios, Bank of Spain. This is working very well. It's currently all seeing positive results. And this is one of the key positions we have across our portfolios. Recently, we've been adding to our Spanish housing plays. The idea here is that as the Spanish housing market recovers from almost a decade-long slump after the financial crisis and the economic situation in Spain continues to improve, we've been looking for ways to play it. We have two ideas in our strategies at the moment, AEDAS and Neinor Homes, both of which I think are extremely interesting ways to play this part of the market in what are very, very well-run companies with incredibly well-resourced and very cheap land bank, which is what you want if you're going to play housing. This volatility normalization trade is probably the key thing that's driving our performance at the moment. As I said, this is about 10 to 12% of our portfolio, depending on the strategy. And we own companies like Flow Traders. I added to this company TPI Cap this week. TPI Cap is a British company. It's one of the leading over-the-phone brokers for complex derivatives. The idea is the same as Flow Traders, that when the market volatility picks up, people trade these kind of securities more, and the cost base is quite thick. And so profitability benefits from the higher volumes and the operational leverage. So Flow Traders, TPI Cap, the German Stock Exchange, Deutsche Börse, not a pure play of volatility, but thanks to its index derivatives business, you get the benefit of volatility picking up. In our small cap portfolios, we also own companies such as IG Group, which is a spread betting firm aimed at retail customers. Again, when volatility is high, retail customers go long and short various financial instruments, and IG Group is the best way to play that. And companies like Nex, which maybe is not well known to you, it's an electronic trading platform. Again, these are all sort of financial infrastructure type companies which we've been putting into our portfolios and are benefiting from the current moves in the market. Where are we looking? We are still looking at energy. The oil prices, of course, is going up rather than down at the moment, down at the moment. But perhaps oil prices will fall at some point substantially and give us a chance to buy some very well-run but high-quality oil companies. It really depends on what OPEC and the Russians decide to do in terms of their output, because at the moment they are cutting their output or keeping it at quite a low level to try and keep the oil price high. But that might not always be the case. Of course, the best time to buy energy-related stocks is when the oil price is under huge pressure, and we've done a lot of work over the last 18 months on this part of the market, and we're patiently waiting for the opportunity to come. Of course, I've talked about Brexit many times. That still hasn't happened yet in terms of the panic in the UK market. I don't know if that will come, but it's still, as an opportunity, it's still out there. Just to remind you, I think in this part of the market, we would look to buy cyclical companies which are very domestically focused in the UK. So things like house builders, real estate companies, leisure companies, construction companies. And then the UK's got some very, very good quality businesses that earn higher returns. All of them are a bit expensive at the moment, but there is a chance, of course, that if the UK economy weakens substantially, and there's some signs that it's starting to roll over, that we get a chance to buy those kind of companies into our portfolio. And the last thing I maybe focus on highlight is we're starting to look at Sweden. This is a really interesting market. The Swedish housing market's done very, very well for a number of years. But it's starting to come under pressure. And so we're looking up and down the value chain for opportunities. You know, you've got the banks like Swedbank and Handelsbank, and Handelsbank in particular is a very, very well-run bank, obviously exposed to the Swedish housing market. But you also got companies which are house builders. You've got industrial companies providing equipment into that industry. And you've got construction companies. And we're looking up and down the value chain for ideas. Now, it's too early at the moment to take any action, but this is certainly on our radar screen. And we'll see how that plays out. This is something which we're discussing as a team. Maybe there's opportunities in this part of the market. So that's really what I want to point out. You know, our areas of focus are, as ever, opportunistic. It depends what the market happens in the market. But this is where we're thinking and doing research at the moment in case we get an opportunity at some point in the next 12 to 18 months. So I'll stop there, open up for questions. Very happy to answer any questions that you have. Please, operator or Natalie, if we can hand it back to you and give us instructions about how everyone can ask any questions that they may have.
Thank you very much. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be taken by an operator. If you wish to cancel this request, please press the hash key. So that is star and one if you wish to ask a question, please. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad. We have no questions coming through. Oh, there is one question, and as the only one, I will just quickly open the line. Your line is now open. Please ask your question.
Hi, Mike. It's Mark from Andrews Gwynn in Leeds. Just wondered how many stocks you've got in the portfolio at the moment, and how you see that progressing as assets kind of increase, and what current AUM is on the mainstream fund.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Thanks for the question. So it depends on the fund. So as you know, we run four strategies here on the European equity team.
Yes, so the continental.
So the Continental European Selection Fund has got, which is our direct UK product. I've got 30 stocks at the moment. The AUM on that is £170 million, and you know that's increased quite substantially over the last 18 months. It was something like 20 or 30 million about 12, 18 months ago. So we've seen good increase there, but still very concentrated portfolio. The other portfolio is 30 stocks in European Selection. These are our higher alpha funds, which are tracking around 6% in the more large cap fund, the European Opportunities Fund. We have 41 names at the moment and about 900 million of assets. And then Claire's small and mid cap fund, as always, is very concentrated at 35 stocks.
Great, okay. How's the development of the income fund coming along?
We are. I'm now trying to work out how much I'm allowed to tell you
in terms of the actual thing.
We're about to launch in the UK market a Continental European Income Fund, which is exactly the same as we do in our selection fund, but with an income flavour of targeting roughly a 4% dividend yield. That is anticipated to launch in early March.
Early March, okay, that's good to know. Excellent, thanks Mike.
Okay, thanks for the question, Mark.
No worries.
Thank you. And we have no further questions. Just a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad. We have no further questions. Please continue.
Okay, thank you. So if you have no other questions, or if you have questions maybe later, do not hesitate to contact us. And I thank you all for your interest in the strategy, and thank you, Mike, for your interesting explanation. And I wish you all a good day. Thank you.
Thank you.
That does conclude the conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect. Speaker, please stay on the line.